Hello, and welcome to the 11th episode of 80 Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, David.
I'm David, and I'm trying to figure out how to replace Andrew with a giant robot as my best friend.
What?
You would if you had the chance.
It's true. I mean, video game robots are always the best. They're the best of bros.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of the show, I would like to mention that 80 Game Club has a Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/80gameclub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. And I'm trying to be a little bit more active there in posting stuff. Like earlier, I posted what our July game would be to give maybe someone a heads up.
Okay, fine. I'll play the game before a week before we record.
Yeah, probably a good idea since the next game's going to be 25 hours-ish to complete.
Yeah.
But before we talk about that, let's talk about June's game of the month, which was Titanfall 2, the first-person shooter that came out in 2016, just 1 year ago. November, mm-hmm. I think.
Yep.
Sounds right. This was David's choice of game, and let's start out with asking, what was your familiarity going into this game, Titanfall 2?
So I didn't really hear anything about it before it came out, but it was one of those games that I heard people talking about it and praising it a lot after the fact. And especially one level in particular, the effect and cause level, which we're going to probably talk about a lot.
Oh,
so,
yes.
You know, once I heard people on, news sites and podcasts talking about how it was really great and better than I expected, I wanted to buy it, and it was one of my first purchases with my PS4. It was also, cheaper than some other games, which I guess was helpful.
Yeah, it did not do well sales-wise. And it, same for me. I had heard amazing praise for this game, and it came out against, kind of squashed in between, the Battlefield 1, which was just a huge game for its series, and then right after Titanfall 2 came, whatever the newest Call of Duty was. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. Infinite sounds right. I had heard a ton of praise, and I had always been interested in Titanfall from the first one. I love that idea of giant robots. I was a huge fan of MechWarrior back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I had heard that the first game was a really fun game, but was just lacking that single-player mode that I require in order to actually get into a video game. And they were doing that in Titanfall 2, and everyone was reporting in that Titanfall 2's campaign was epic and awesome and a must-play, even compared to these other juggernauts that are coming out the same week or two of that time frame, so... And that kind of goes into the series as a whole. Like I said, the first game was multiplayer only, and it didn't do well. Like, I heard the multiplayer fell off pretty quickly for that game. Probably mm-hmm. also didn't help that it was Xbox One and PC exclusive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this was also the first time it was available on Sony, and that was part of the reason I decided I'd give it a shot. With my PlayStation 4 was as a consumer saying, hey, I really respect that you guys have opened it up. You added that campaign that I crave, and I'm going to give you dollars to prove that I really like what you're doing here. And I take that gamble of getting this game basically at launch.
Yeah, I had vaguely heard of the first one, but it just sort of slid to the back of my consciousness almost immediately because it was an online multiplayer only first person shooter, and with some exceptions I did get pretty caught up in the Overwatch craze, but For the most part, I don't really play online-only multiplayer games because I don't, neither of us really has a group of people to play regularly, play the same game at the same time, and
We've
get
tried.
into. We have tried. It just doesn't work out with other people's schedules or for even for us to have, more than the occasional game day. So I think I heard of the original Titanfall and thought that sounds like a cool idea and immediately forgot about it.
Yeah, and like I said, it sounded like most of its community forgot about it as well.
Yes. That makes it even harder to get into that kind of game if you, invest money into it and do get past that step of learning how to play and becoming competent, and then it doesn't become one of those big mega hits, and now the community that you're going to play with is gone.
Yeah. But so there's mechs, there's a campaign, but and people were saying good things, but what really made it a game where you wanted to have us play it together as part of this podcast?
Part of it was because, like I said, I heard about it because of other podcasts, and I thought that we'd probably have a lot to talk about because it's other people thought it was interesting enough to talk about a lot, and I just, thought that it was a game that I wanted to try while it was still kind of fresh and didn't want it to just get forgotten again.
Yeah.
And I do really like the idea of jumping in and out of, mechs and switching between on the ground combat and mech combat. So I really wanted to try that out now that there was a campaign to play that in.
I was always sure I would enjoy this game. I mean, it's the same studio, basically. Respawn is the prior Infinity Ward behind Call of Duty 4. Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2, and I think Modern Warfare 3. I believe Modern Warfare 3 was their last one before they abandoned ship. But like the Call of Duty series always had these really intense and fun single player campaigns, and I knew going in that I would definitely be getting that. Just from the pedigree, and that's what a lot of people were saying is like Infinity Ward took some years off. They didn't have the campaign in the previous game, but they had built this world, and they came in with the second game with a campaign, and it was what shooters have been waiting for, was like what I kept being told. And I was like, ooh, I really want to check this out. And again, on the pro consumer side of things, they're still like actively, I think in the last week or two, they released new maps for the multiplayer for free. So and yeah, I was already planning to play this game. I bought it, and I was when you suggested it, I jumped on board on that. I think it was a fantastic idea for us to play this together. Anything else before we jump into spoilers and start actually talking about our experience with this game and this story?
No, that pretty much covers it.
Okay. Would you like to do the honors?
So, the plot of this game is that there's a war between the sort of vaguely defined the IMC. I forget if we know what that stands for, but I assume it's Imperial something something, and the militia, which is
The
I believe.
resistance.
The resistance. Basically, it's explained at one point that in an audio log that the IMC controls sort of the central space, and the militia is made up of people on the edges that don't want the IMC to come in and take all their resources. So, you play as Jack Cooper, a rifleman in the militia that wants to become a pilot on the front lines. And his training is cut short when his unit is deployed to attack an IMC installment on the planet Typhon. In the initial battle, the Apex Predators, a mercenary group hired by the IMC, kill Cooper's mentor, Captain Lastimosa, and incapacitate his Titan, BT-7274. And before he dies, Lastimosa transfers his authorization to Cooper, making him the acting pilot of BT. And BT and Cooper set off to complete Lastimosa's special operation mission to rendezvous with another agent, Major Anderson, and basically find out what their assignment there is. So when you find Major Anderson, he's deceased, and you have to take over his mission, which it turns out is to find out what's going on this military base, which is a super weapon that will allow the IMC to destroy the militia's homeworld from Typhon.
The Fold weapon.
Yes, you encounter time anomalies that allow you to sort of scan the power source of the Fold weapon and track it down, meet up with other militia pilots to attack the IMC and end up having to fight those mercenaries and chase them to the Fold weapon and stop it as it's trying to fire.
Yeah, all very, very epic.
So there are two parts of the story that I want to mention as being really great. The first one was when you get that authorization to pilot BT, because the setup for that is great. First, you run through a training exercise that teaches you the ground controls.
That training, actually, the virtual training, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the very beginning. I thought that was genius. Have you ever played any of the Call of Duty games, by the way?
No.
No? So every Call of Duty game I've played, there is a sort of like you're in a basic training sort of environment and you're going through. And it is the very similar of there's stationary like cardboard enemies that you shoot as you're making it through this obstacle course. But this VR idea was so awesome, and the time trials, and I just thought it was that moment when I realized that I didn't have to just run through it. I could jump onto the walls. And that just sort of like this mind explosion
and like
part of
instead of like running back and forth, you know, zigzagging between obstacles, you could just jump up and run over them across the wall.
Yeah,
while shooting down. That was great.
Yeah, and it's a completely like safe space. You know, it's a safe space where you can really experiment. It has all I don't know if it has all, but it has a lot of the different weapons you might potentially run into. Like, it's a fantastic place to just experiment and get used to things.
Right. And so what I really liked about that story-wise was that they let you explore the guns and mobility in the safe environment, but when you're ready to move on, Lastimosa tells you that he's ready to show you how to pilot a Titan, and you call it down, and then you get an alert that you have to that you're ready to drop on the IMC encampment, and everything's put on hold, and
it's
so you don't get that
tease.
It's that tease. You don't get that taste of you get a taste of being a pilot, but you don't get the taste of being a mech, and even when you do get that authorization, you know, after Lastimosa is killed and sort of, you know, dies giving you his mech with his last breath, you still don't get to pilot it. You have to run around collecting batteries to essentially repair it. And so it's a lot of build up to that first moment when you actually get into the Titan. And fire the huge weapons and lock on to 20 enemies and fire missiles all at once. And I thought that was a really effective tease and build up to that moment.
Yes, the pacing is really fantastic for both the gameplay and the, as far as the story, the making you want it, and it doesn't start out at 11. It starts out at that like 7, and it builds. It gives some room to actually build up from there, and it's really great. And as far as that that teasing, like you get to start out as the pilot with the double jump and everything in the training, but then when you're actually on the ground fighting, you don't have any of the pilot equipment. And then when you do get the pilot equipment, it takes some time for it to calibrate to you, so you're still not just like double jumping or doing anything crazy. You're still like slowly building it out, even in that first level or two. So yeah, pacing all around is pretty great. There is a chapter. Do you mind if I do a chapter? You do your second chapter? So the moment I want to talk about, the moment I'm going to talk about as far as like a story element that I really liked how they did it, was you get you take over BT from Lastimoso, and then you take over his special mission to complete finding Anderson, and you find him, you find out about the Fold weapon, and now you have to get to the rest of the militia, specifically to get to the commander, Sarah Briggs. And when you finally get to her and you're reporting in, and it's this moment of, you totally get it, of she sees this rifleman who is temporarily taking over this as a pilot, taking over this mech, and it's in the middle of this war that is going disastrously so far. And she's like, okay, great job. Get out so that I can get a real pilot in there. And BT, being the best, just says, no, wait. We're actually awesome together. Don't reassign him. I've already lost one pilot. Don't make me lose another, sort of thing. And it's just that moment of course she would do that. And that's completely natural of like you want to get someone you know is trained to be a pilot in there, not this just random rifleman you've never heard of. And then because he's been so awesome because of BT vouching for you, I mean, it just, as far as the story element goes, it was this, I feel like that was really well done, and I really liked how they played that out.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to my other scene, which, is continuing the trend of BT just being the best, was very late in the game. You try to, well, you successfully steal this power core that everybody's fighting over in the end game, but you are beat up and BT is beat up and you're captured by these mercenaries, but BT has the core in his chest and they don't want to break him open because it could be unstable. So you're tied up and they're trying to force BT to open his, cockpit, his chest compartment. And despite being a robot and speaking in a sort of monotone, BT has a lot of personality. So instead of just refusing, he basically, well, they say like, okay, we'll shoot your pilot if you don't open up. And BT looks up and says something like, "Ocular systems damaged. Cannot confirm pilot identity." They're like, "Okay, fine." And drag you over to BT and hold you up and put the gun to your head and like, look, here's your pilot. We're going to shoot him if you don't give us the thing." And BT kind of slumps and his face looks away and he says something about how his, systems are damaged and can't raise his head or something ridiculous. And it's clear that he's just making all of this up to get into a position to try to save you.
Yes, it is so obvious and so well done. I love it.
And I kind of suspect as well that, when Sarah Briggs is trying to reassign you and BT basically says, "Well, hold on, our combat effectiveness is over 90%. after making it through the rest of the game and looking back on that moment, he was probably lying.
Oh.
Or maybe it was really 90%, but I kind of like it better that he just sort of said, no, this is the most effective pilot I've ever had because he likes you and wants to keep working, and you are effective.
Yeah. It really does have a great bond between the two of you. And as far as like the story elements and there's dialogue that you can have between you and BT, and I actually liked it this time, unlike with Uncharted 4 when it gave you the optional stuff. I actually liked being able to choose how I talked with BT because I felt like it did actually add something to the characters and kind of the story overall. Like, it gave you options of choosing, hey, do I want to like question this or ask about this so that I get more details, or just say something snarky or bravado. And yeah, I feel like as far as story goes and as far as like character development, they did a really great job in laying out the details and then bringing you through this story. Even though it wasn't a very complicated story or long, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and so getting into what we both liked about it, as we've been talking about, I loved the relationship between Cooper and BT, just like I kind of talked about in Zone of the Enders and Zone of the Enders 2. I just love that progression from them not being totally sure how to work together, mostly, Cooper being unsure of how to pilot and, how much to trust BT, to the end of the game where they just completely trust each other and, going from, for example, about halfway through the game, BT suggests, like, throwing Cooper to
Yes.
get him somewhere so that he can go get a transmitter. And Cooper's like, I guess. Are you sure about this? And by the end of the game, you're
Just
just,
throwing yourself into
you're just
his
like,
hand.
all right, get in position, fastball special, let's go.
Yep. It really becomes like one of those signature moves between the two of them. Yeah, BT is just a fantastic character. I mean, he's supposed to be an AI, and I really hope that someday we get to that point, like in my lifetime, I mean, we get to the point where AI is actually able to learn and grow and customize itself in that way with its pilot or with their counterpart. 'Cause, like, Cooper's always doing fun, like, the things that we would normally say, like, or like, especially like playing video games, like, there's one part where he says that, where Cooper says he's on a hot streak. And BT
Yes.
looks at him and says, "Your temperature is normal," or something like that. And Cooper's like, "No, I'm." It's a phrase meaning that we're like doing really awesome. And then BT will use that in the future, or like making a thumbs up. And it's just so much great stuff. And this is a spoiler for the very end of the game, but that bond between the two of them, that having to protect, is hardwired into BT. There's these protocols, these three protocols, and the third protocol is about protecting the pilot. The like hard coded in those like three laws of robotics. The third law is that BT must always protect the pilot at all costs. And you're both going in there. BT is damaged to the point where his protocols aren't even loading. And you're just both going in to destroy this weapon. And at the last moment, his protocols are resetting and Protocol 3 loads. And you see it for just a flash finished. And he's immediately pulling you out of the cockpit and throwing you like he's been doing all game. But he's throwing you to safety. And it doesn't even need explanation. It's BT has to do this. And it's sad to see him go, but. Ah, oh, there's just so much awesome BT. It's so perfectly executed. There's a lot of stuff here that I wrote down that I loved. I loved a lot of this game. I would like to bring up platforming next. So we've both played Mirror's Edge, but Mirror's Edge was that game that was all about you're a first person platformer. You're like, it's not called Spelunky. What is it? Parkour?
Parkour.
Parkour. I don't know why
Yeah,
I was
your
thinking
first person
Spelunky.
Spelunky. Oh, it's a very different game, I think.
Yes. But yeah, parkour where you're running on top of buildings, you're jumping off walls, you're doing almost the exact same thing you're doing in this game, but it feels amazing in this game, and the gunplay feels like this is everything that I feel Mirror's Edge wanted to be. And I haven't played Mirror's Edge 2 or Catalyst. It's called Catalyst. I haven't played that one, but I guarantee it does not play anywhere near as good as this. Because if it did, everyone would have been talking about Mirror's Edge, and I don't know. I just it's so good to be able to like the like I said in the training part of it, the VR part of it, where you're so used to in these first-person shooters going down tight corridors of enemies popping out of cover, and you're just dodging in and out of cover yourself, just straight lines. But this one, I felt like I was dancing, like I was just this flow of water
It was just so easy to look where you
killing
wanted to
everyone.
go and to just like go there.
Yeah. I really felt like I was some sort of flying angel of death that just no one could stop me. And the fact that you could turn invisible and then jump and just get anywhere you wanted, basically, it was amazing. And I don't know why this why isn't this more of a thing? Why do we? I guess it might be more of a thing because Call of Duty has jetpacks and stuff too, I guess. I don't know. But the wall running and platforming, it wasn't really what I expected going into this game. I did not expect the platforming to be so good, but it was the level where they're building arenas, and there's a couple of times where the buildings are actually like sideways. They're on their sides, but you're And they're just pure platforming sections. And it's still a lot of fun to play those. You don't have to be fighting things to have fun in this game, and it's great. I feel like that went on a while. Sorry.
Well, so I'm just gonna steal one of your notes anyway, that I really loved the level design too, of like the battlefields that are so open. It never Well, sometimes it does feel like, you have one path, but much more often you get into an area and it's like an open area with enemies in a few different directions, and you can decide how to, run around and sneak behind them, or get up to a high spot and shoot down at them, or, get behind cover and jump out and hit them at close range. And there's just several paths, several things you have to watch out for. And it works so well with the mobility that, if I died in a particular battle, it never felt like I absolutely had to just do the same thing but better. There was almost always a way that I could look around and say, well, if that didn't work because there's enemies around this corner, maybe I need to climb up above and just throw a grenade down at them while I run over them.
Or like swap out your weapon with a different one, 'cause then like I was having trouble for a little while in the early game. Just I wasn't the rifles were keeping me farther away from the enemies than I really wanted to be. And I found out that the shotguns were actually perfect for me and how I like to dodge around and like just almost sneak up on the enemies and then just blast them away with shotguns and punches and like oh and your melee moves are lethal.
Oh,
But
yeah.
yeah, it's just and then when you do get once you've like finished that surprise round and they realize you're there and they're all targeting you. You can either dance away or uses your invisibility cloak thing and like just sneak behind them, and it's always interesting and fun. And the environments are unique all the way through, I think.
Yeah, each level had very different environments, not only in what they looked like, but the, you know, how you could navigate around them and what kind of shapes there were to deal with, and that felt great.
Yeah. Anything else to say about that before we move into the time travel?
Oh yeah, also just talking about the platforming and mobility, I didn't realize going in how different the pilot versus the mech would feel, because I didn't realize
Oh,
that
yeah.
the when you're piloting BT, you are super powerful, but actually a lot less mobile. You can't jump. You just have a dash on the ground. So as a pilot, you are very mobile and very have a lot of vertical mobility, but you're also vulnerable. As the mech, you have all of these hugely powerful weapons. You can just mow down enemies or, you know, drop a shield, and you feel extremely powerful, but you're also limited in where you can go. And I was, you know, kind of expecting a game where I had to wonder, you know, why would you even get out of the mech? And there were some places where they force you to be separated, well, quite a lot
Yes.
actually, but it definitely felt like there were both good modes of play that you had to jump between that felt very different.
They felt like the moment when you're in the mech, what I did not expect was how small everything else would look while you're inside the mech. And
Yes.
I kind of wonder how they pulled that off. But yeah, it was always fun, and because they constantly would separate you out, especially whenever BT would have to throw you somewhere, and any chance I had to be in BT, I took it. I loved to be within, like as the mech, just destroying other mechs, which meant that I didn't get the achievement or whatever to destroy a mech as a pilot. That's definitely
Nope,
something I'll be
me either.
getting the next time around.
I did get all of the trophies related to using the different core ultimate abilities, just because it was fun trying out every mech loadout and seeing what they did.
I actually missed one of them, the one in the effect and cause. I somehow missed it. I guess it's on the wall or something. Like it's attached to maybe a mech that's in or like repair. I don't know,
Yeah, it was.
but
I remember that. It was in the building where
yeah,
the other mechs were just sitting on the wall.
I missed it. I was so busy fighting or doing whatever that I completely missed that one. So
I
I
think it
did
was
not get
only
that.
in one time period, so you may have just
Yeah.
missed it because of that.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Speaking of which.
Hey, the time travel. So, like, as far as an element, time travel between two fixed points in time is actually, like, pretty common. And one of my favorite games for that has been Singularity. I think they did that fantastically well. But what I feel like they didn't really do there, but did happen here. Well, I'll cover the classic implementations of like a door is broken in one timeline but works in the past, or a security gate is active in one time period but is broken in the other. I mean, like even when we played Zelda, they had the exact same thing going on there with the pirate ship. Like this is super classic implementation of time travel. For the beginning portion of it, where you don't even have control over it at the start, where it's like you just have to wait sort of until it does it, but it's timed well enough you get through. But what really surprised me about the time travel in this game was how they implemented it in the battle situations. I can't recall other games in which you will have completely different enemy types and like AI fighting in two time periods in the same location, where in one time period of the past you're fighting the IMC, and then in the future you're or present you're fighting the wild animals or whatever that have sort of taken over this facility, and I thought that was a pretty genius moment, in my opinion, because I couldn't just jump into the other time period and recover and wait or whatever.
Yeah,
It was still just as much of a threat in the other time period.
There was a great moment where, and I suspect this is the same battle that you're thinking of, where I sort of jumped into a large room with some kind of big servers or cabinets or whatever they were for cover, and a bunch of soldiers jumped out and started shooting at me. So I jumped back to the present, because the soldiers are in the past. I jump back to the present, and then these big lizard predators all jumped down and started attacking, and I was already trying to, you know, this is one of those games where if you don't take damage for a certain period of time, you start recovering. So, you know, I was expecting to just be able to wait a few seconds, but these things came out and attacked me, and so I had to remember where the soldiers were and run to where I would have cover from them and then switch back to get away from the monsters.
Yeah, and I really can't think of other games that have sort of mixed the combat with the time travel element like that, of the swapping back and forth, to create these really intense battles where you can't take a break. Where, yes, you normally would, but you just can't. Or I also love the fact that in one time period, the robots are all, like, disrepair or falling apart, but then in the other, they're, like, prime and ready to go. So you can just sort of, like, jump back and forth with those. It's just so much fun. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, there is a game that I would compare it to, but I know that it's a game that you are going to play in the future, so I don't want to
Is it Dishonored 2?
Spoil that. Yes, it's Dishonored 2.
Yeah, I know that there's that level coming up. I'm honestly surprised that I haven't made it there yet. I feel like I'm past or at the halfway point in that game, but
it's pretty that one's pretty far in.
I have some post thoughts that I want to deliver. Like, once we're done talking about this game, I do want to, like, mention something about, because, like, I played this game. I was playing Dishonored 2, and then I took a break to play this game, Titanfall 2, and then I've gone back to Dishonored 2, and doing that has, like, triggered some thoughts that I would like to discuss a little bit after we're done recording here.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I just wasn't sure. I know you are pretty. I thought of a word, but I don't know if that's what that word actually means, so I won't use it. You're pretty careful about
spoilers.
I didn't want to bring that up if you didn't already know that was in Dishonored 2.
I try. I really try. But so, I think that was even in, like, some of the initial E3 of last year sort of coverage.
But, I was just going to say, it does something, it works very similarly, but I don't think it does. And it does have sort of different enemy types, but I can't think of any instances where it has I was going to say combat. I guess being a sneaking game, I tried to avoid combat in Dishonored 2, but I think it was implemented better in Titanfall 2, just because it was a more, you know, focused game where you move from prepared battle to prepared battle, where Dishonored 2 has more exploring and sneaking.
Yeah. Anything else that you would like to mention as far as the likes?
No, I think we covered it. There's a lot there to like, but I think we got through the major points.
So what did we not like, David?
I only have one point, and it's really minor, but that factory, the World Forge, it just doesn't make any sense. And this is probably because I built up trying to figure out what it was for. So the level is a big factory where there are automated machines putting together a neighborhood. Like, there's a big metal plate that's covered in AstroTurf, and then they put a building on it, and then they put some mannequins in the building. And it's a huge factory that looks like it takes up the inside of a large mountain, and you're moving through these caverns full of machinery, and I was trying to figure out what it was for. And then at the end of the level, or near the end, there's still a good amount after this point, but you get pushed up on one of these platforms into an arena, where the villain of that section, I think that was Ash, one of the mercenaries, is basically sending the IMC soldiers she's supposed to be in charge of out to fight these robots, and he's just doing it for some, hypothetically for training, but really she's just getting some sick satisfaction out of it, and then you have to go through the arena. So, oh no, wait, I'm sorry, it wasn't the IMC, it was Captured Militia that she was sending. Either
Yes.
way, it seemed like such a weird purpose to just have this giant factory for torturing these soldiers, and surely in the future there's an easier way to set up an arena with fake buildings, and then they go, oh well, there's a pilot that snuck in there, you better just destroy the entire facility.
Destroy him.
Surely if we just explode the entire building, then he'll probably die. And apparently I don't know, the grandiose appearance of this factory level that you're trying to get through, that you're trying to take a shortcut through
Yes.
initially,
No more
it didn't
shortcuts.
it didn't match the actual purpose and the sort of casual way they go, oh well, I guess that's a wash, let's just destroy it then,
It
we'll get
is.
you another toy later.
It doesn't make sense, but it is a sort of fun twist, in my opinion.
It was a fun level, and I'm sure that they came up with the design for the level first, and having you run across these, like riding these platforms as they're being moved around and constructed,
Yeah.
and then sort of came up with the justification after the fact,
And
because
have, yeah.
it is a really cool level design.
And having fun with the fact that the buildings could be just they're constantly rotating or they're on their side and you're having to platform your way around on top of them or, yeah, it.
Risk. And there's a brief little portal-like moment when they decide to scuttle the whole factory, and now you're jumping around between these fake arenas that are also blowing up and have the machinery exposed.
Yes. It was a lot of fun. Even if I didn't think about the fact that the amount of resources involved with creating such a factory and what they're actually using it for, and who knows, maybe there's some sort of extra information somewhere that explains the real backstory of it. Maybe. I, at the time, wrote that I had nothing to dislike about this game. When I was done with this game and I was writing down my notes, I said, I have nothing to complain about. And I guess I'm just going to say it here instead of waiting, but I sort of realized after the fact that there isn't really a lot of player agency in this game. And I'm going to list that as a minor complaint, that it is a really super fun experience, but in the end, because of how on rails it really is, I think that's why I didn't immediately want to replay it like I have other games that I, at the time of playing, have loved just as much. Like Infamous Second Son, a game that we did here, I played that game twice. Back to back because I was just having so much fun with it, and the fact that I had a blast with this game, but then I immediately dropped it to go back to playing Dishonored 2, I feel says at least something, and what I'm attributing to that is the feeling of agency. It's definitely a fun roller coaster ride, though. I don't
Yeah,
want to
it's
in any way say that this isn't.
the kind of thing that, it not every game has to have like quote unquote meaningful choices, but it does make it is something that, makes it more fun to go back and play a game you've already beaten when you can see something different.
Yeah.
So what are your particularly noteworthy moments of achievement and frustration?
So I had one moment that did sort of like give me that feeling of euphoria, I guess, or like feeling elated over having achieved this. It was when you had the time jump ability, and a lot of this building is just in the present is destroyed, on fire, death traps everywhere, and a lot of it is you're platforming. And there's this one part where there's a long hallway, and you're supposed to wall jump, no, wall run and jump several times back and forth to get across it. And one of the ways that this the double jump sort of works is that if you're it'll change your momentum. And I sort of flubbed the second jump as part of this wall run, meaning that I was just going to fall straight into this fire underneath me and die. And as I was falling, I instinctively hit the time swap button, and I was amazed to find out that where the fire is, in one timeline, was actually just a regular room, just an empty room in the other timeline, meaning that I was safe. I was able to save myself in the middle of this just flubbed jump. And I had this moment of, oh my God, I did it. I didn't die. I can actually get out of here. All I have to do is start running at on the wall, jump at the ceiling, and before I hit the ceiling, switch back to the other timeline and get out of this pit. And just that, I love it when games do give you that ability to recover from a mistake, where it's not an instant, oh, you messed up, you have to go back to a checkpoint.
Yeah.
And
I
so
also
the
had a
oh,
great
sorry.
moment in that level where, kind of similar situation, but for a different reason. There's a long hallway that had a high and a low part, and like a lot of them, in the ruined section, the bottom part was just full of jagged spikes and fire. But in the what I discovered in the past, where everything was still nice, was that there was a glass, glass floor between the top and the bottom sections. The top section didn't go anywhere. The bottom section was where I needed to go, and there were soldiers at the end, with a shield, and I think there might have been a turret there, maybe not, but there was definitely one of the guys with a shield that's a pain to fight head on. And at first I thought I would need to just go back to the beginning of the hallway, drop down, and fight my way down there. And then I realized I could stand at the back of the hallway behind the soldiers, switch to the present where everything was terrible, and drop just below that glass, and then switch back before I hit the fire and hit the soldiers from behind.
And did it go as you had planned?
Yes, I
Awesome.
managed to do that and not be killed by the fire and inexplicably sharp, pointy objects that were all very dense and pointing straight up.
Really, all of that level, the way that the platforming works, the way the combat works, and the way they use that the two timelines together like that, I really. Almost all of my favorite moments are from that section. There's a couple of others, but a large portion of this game and my love for it are from that section. They did a fantastic job with it. Oh, it was so good. Especially like, and it's definitely one of those areas where you would have had to spend the most time wandering and exploring, which I obviously didn't. As, like you said, the loadout for BT was in one timeline, but not the other. And there were the helmets that you're collecting throughout the game. There were several of those where it's just in one timeline. So if you're just running through in a single timeline, you're likely going to miss some of those helmets. And yeah, it was really well done.
I think that was one of the few levels where I got all of the helmets, actually.
Oh, really?
I suspect that's because just because of the timeline switching, they didn't have any that were really far out of the way. Instead, you had more of the helmets that were sort of in your path, but you had to figure out how to get there using the time swapping. Whereas I'm pretty sure most of the ones that I missed in the other levels were where you had to stop following the path and explore and find something off to the side.
There was one helmet that I saw, but I never actually saw the opportunity to get. So in the kind of the near the end when you're doing the when you're on the airships, and the airship that I think was it Sarah? Yeah, Sarah Briggs is in. There's a helmet inside that aircraft, and you see it whenever the door opens. But I never saw that opportunity where you're supposed to get into that aircraft to get the helmet. Did you
Yeah,
happen
there
to see
were
that?
no, I don't I didn't see that, but there were a few other moments where so the way that these collectible helmets are highlighted is that they'll glow blue, and if you the further away you are, the bigger the glow is, so you can in the open areas you can see them from a distance and they'll stand out. So there were a few other places where I could see that, and by the time I got close to that area I couldn't find it again. Or in the beacon level where you have to go out, where the first time BT throws you and you go out onto these raised platforms and run around, get the transmitter and come back. When I came back and was standing high up on the satellite and turned around, I saw one of those helmets glowing on the platforms. But after I came back down, I tried and I couldn't get back out there.
Anything else you want to mention before we start wrapping up?
Yeah, so I think yeah, I was at the beginning of that World Forge where BT tells you, "Oh, we should go through here. It's a shortcut to
Yes.
meet up with Major Anderson." And there was an earlier point where they sort of force you to be separated by having you flip a switch, and then there's a, containment because you're opening some sewage to let BT out, and you can't get out there. And so when you get into the factory, you have to get out and go flip another switch again. So I was thinking, are they going to do the same thing, or are they just going to come up with an excuse for us to be separated? And I went and I flipped the switch, and nothing happened. It just activated the elevator. So I said, okay, fine. They're
Okay, yeah.
not quite that predictable. And then as I got out, a giant, or there's a voice that says that an unauthorized Titan has been detected, or intruder, or something like that, and a big mechanical arm grabs BT from behind and starts carrying him off, and you have to follow him.
Yep.
And that was great, not only because it turned out to be exactly what I thought it was. It was also great because this is shortly after you get to pilot BT, and it just feels so powerful and invincible. And then you see him, picked up behind like a cat being picked up by the scruff of the neck, and he's just flailing and reaching and shooting at the arm and can't do anything. And
Yeah.
in fact, the loading screen, which usually has the log of Cooper explaining what he's doing, the loading screen after that moment is a log of BT basically saying,
His multiple attempts to escape.
like escape attempt number 23, unsuccessful. Beginning escape attempt number 24, unsuccessful. Reevaluating definition, shortcut.
As that's some really good, like that, whoever was the writer for
Oh yeah.
that was genius. Like, very well done, sir or ma'am. I don't know.
They did a the writers and I don't remember who the actor was, but the actor for BT, they just did a fantastic job of making him believable as a robot, but also giving him so much personality.
Yeah, it really surprised me. Did you play any of the multiplayer?
No, I thought about it, and then I just thought that, I don't want to go through the period of joining a game and not knowing what I'm doing, and so my team loses because I don't know what I'm doing. And
Yeah.
I also suspect that, it's been out for a while, and while there is new content, we're not playing it because of some big event that would have other new players come in, so it's probably at this point just a lot of very experienced players.
Yeah, I've seen some there's always some clips that appear on Reddit gaming for this game, and every single time it's pilots doing just crazy things that I wouldn't be able to pull off. I mean, of course, that's how it is for any multiplayer game. The videos that get famous are one-offs, like they're not the regular, but it does make you feel like, I could never compare to that. But yeah, I haven't played the multiplayer either. I kind of immediately I planned to at least check it out, but like I said, I was pulled back into playing Dishonored 2 very quickly, and I that's the only bad thing I can really think of this game. Everything else is just a lot of love. I love this game. And I'm sure I will return to it in the future, and I will make sure to collect everything and explore everything, and using a guide to make sure I don't miss any little detail. And maybe I'll figure out that reason for the World Forge. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I definitely plan to revisit in the future.
Yeah, I agree. This was completely enjoyable. I'm glad that we both set aside the time to play it because it was a short but enjoyable all the way through experience, and that's always nice compared to, a lot of games that are, 20 hours and, most of it's pretty fun, some of it is a slog. This just was great all the way through, great pacing, great changing everything up with each level.
So yeah, we both really enjoyed this game, and I'm sure if there's a Titanfall 3, we'll be there.
I want there to be a Titanfall 3 just so that we can see Blisk, the mercenary captain, again.
Ooh. That was something really special in this game, how each of the bad guys, even though each of them are in a mech, each of the pilots are in a mech, they always take that moment to open their cockpits to like stand up and show their face off, and like that there's so many good touches to this game. The fact that he instead of killing you at the end, he just leaves you a calling card, and just so much good
Right.
stuff.
It's that moment of, oh yeah, this isn't, this is a war where these two sides are trying to wipe each other out, but this guy is just being paid, and
He is
he
paid
reached.
specifically to deliver this item. He's delivered it.
Right.
He doesn't
And
care at this point.
you've already gone through this point where he tortured you and seemingly killed your robot, and then when you finally catch up with him again, he's like, I already got paid. I did the job I'm paid for. I don't need to kill you. Here's my card. Call me.
You killed at least a decent portion of his squad, I'm sure. It was so good.
Well, that's how you spot talent.
Yes, it's true. I mean, if only more evil henchmen realized that. I think with that we're wrapped. Right?
And next month.
Next month. So yeah, next month. This month we went from mechs with Zone of the Enders into mechs with Titanfall 2. This time we're going to take the time travel element of Titanfall 2 and keep that going into the loosely called video game Steins Gate. A game slash visual novel which is all about time travel, and I've heard many good things about how this game plays, or at least the choices that you're offered as part of this time travel, and I'm very excited to find out how it really goes through. And I can't believe David's agreed to this with me.
I think I know we've talked about this before. I think Steins Gate was the specific game where I said that This was years ago before I've played other visual novels. I think Steins Gate was the one where I said, "Oh wow, I can this game's coming out in English. I can actually play it through." And you laughed at me because you didn't think that I would be able to get through a whole visual novel. And I still haven't played it, so I guess.
Even my play record for visual novels are pretty miss, but I have already started this game a little bit and I'm liking it. So I'm excited for next month and I hope we have a good one. So yeah, please play along with us, or I guess read along with us next month. Maybe we are a book club after all. Our next episode is planned for July 30th. And with that, we leave you by saying, game on.